From the newsroom of PCJ Radio International, this is Focus Asia Pacific. I'm Keith Powell. Papua New Guinea's former Prime Minister, Sir Meriki Moraata, says the national election is being rigged under the watch of the Electoral Commission. 4 days into the two-week polling period, the election has been marred with allegations regarding balloting papers and woefully inadequate electoral roll. This past week, police in Port Moresby apprehended three electoral officials, one of whom was found to have a large amount of cash and confiscated ballot papers they had allegedly mishandled. It came hours after the Electoral Commission deferred polling in the capital to Friday and problems around polling in the highlands. The Electoral Commissioner, Patalias Gamato, has denied the allegations that his officers were involved in suspected bribery. But a group of candidates in the capital, including the Prime Minister, have petitioned the Electoral Commission to resign immediately. He told Johnny Blades that this is the most chaotic election in PNG's history.
And unfortunately, this chaos is an organized one. It's organized by PNC, because PNC is likely to be wiped out in a very clean election. So it's in O'Neill's interest to create chaos and then use that chaos to retain as many PNC candidates as possible. We now have caught electoral officers with loads of money and boxes in Moresby already. And this is an example of what is planned to happen. And as Moresby candidates, we have petitioned the Electoral Commissioner to stand down because of his incompetence and also compromising the constitutional office of the Electoral Commission.
Previous elections have had some of these problems, haven't they, with in terms of the electoral roll issues. Are these included in your concerns?
This is more than the electoral rolls. When our petitions, we're saying that 2012 electoral roll be used and the 2017 electoral preliminary roll be combined to use as the electoral rolls for this.
You are all demanding that the Electoral Commissioner stand down. If he doesn't, what then?
There's probably nothing we can do.
Do you think there would be, you know, trouble? Obviously people are concerned about all these issues, about their elections.
Well, if he's got any morals, any conscience, he should stand down. Because chaos, the evidence is already there in our hands, in the police now. And he's very much part of the... But he's the ultimate boss. He's the constitutional officeholder, judged by the constitution, to conduct the elections. If it's gone belly up, he should also go belly up too.
You don't think perhaps he's just unable to control all the people within the commission? Maybe it's out of his hands?
If you're working with O'Neill and Lupari, it's very hard for even a very good person. But he's part of the structure. But someone has to explain why people are carrying money around in the trucks, in the vehicles. That's not normal. It should be paid officially, by finance department or finance officers, not electoral commissioner carrying money around in the trucks. That's highly, highly unusual. Yeah, I thought he was found carrying money around. Yeah, he should be prosecuted and disqualified automatically.
PNG's Electoral Commission is under growing pressure after a raft of polling and common roll problems in the national election. Polling in the national election began on Saturday, with various provinces scheduled for polling at different stages across a two-week period. But the commission has deferred polling in the National Capital District for 3 days due to issues with allowances for polling officials. This comes after the failure on this Monday to conduct polling on the scheduled three Highland provinces amid wide discrepancies on the election roll. Johnny Blades reports from Port Moresby.
Ahead of polling, the governor of the National Capital District, Powers Parkop, says he's been troubled by inconsistencies in the electoral roll. Even members of his family who are eligible to vote have found out late in the piece that their names are not on the new version of the roll. He's criticised the distribution of polling places in the NCD, saying they are often not accessible for local voters and make the system vulnerable to double voting.
You know, Electoral Commission needs to, you know, shape up and deal with this type of basic things that cause problems. It just causes nuisance. You don't have to be a rocket scientist in Papua New Guinea to know it. You just know that. Don't centralize the polling booth. You're going to create mayhem in Port Moresby.
Since polling began on Saturday in some parts of the country, there have been many complaints about discrepancies in the roll. As a result, the Electoral Commissioner has allowed for the election to revert back to the preliminary roll, last updated around the start of the year, where needed. Petalia Skamato said for the first time in a PNG election, there's provision for people to check the roll and submit any objections.
There are minor issues that we are handling, issues like the roll issue. I've already made a decision that the officials can use the preliminary roll, which is near to accurate or is there, almost as good. So we'll continue to use the preliminary roll and hopefully we can complete the polling.
Meanwhile, the Electoral Commission received a visit from an aggrieved group of four candidates contesting Governor Parkop's seat in the capital. One of them, Stephen Kalage, explained that the group have found their names were not on the roll to be used in the election.
When we initially went in there to put our names in, they accepted our forms, we signed the forms. If we were not on the common roll, they shouldn't have accepted us. So we're on the common roll, we've been registered, we're coming in. Final day of voting and our names kind of disappeared, vanished. So that's what we're here about, trying to find out what happened to our names.
What's the implication of this?
Well, if we win, it can be null and void and then we go to a by-election.
But the assurances of the Electoral Commissioner hardly inspired confidence for them.
What he's saying is, the Commission says, just rock up and put our names on. We'll just write our names on and that'll be good enough.
Meanwhile, Governor Parkop urged as many people to vote as possible. Despite the many problems in polling, PNG people usually turn out in high numbers to vote. In Port Moresby, Johnny Blades.
Refugee advocates say the latest attack on a Manus Island detainee shows it's too dangerous for refugees to be settled in Papua New Guinea. The refugee from Bangladesh was flown to Port Moresby last week for emergency surgery after his arm was nearly severed during a mugging outside the detention center. The center is due to close in November, and the 700 refugees are under pressure from the Australian government to move to an open facility nearby Logan Town. The advocate Ian Ratau told Ben Robertson Drawbridge the closure of the center has begun.
They know they've got no resettlement program and people aren't going to go voluntarily, so they've been cutting back services. They've cut everything out of the canteen except for cigarettes and phone cards and pens. There's nothing that people can get inside the detention centre anymore. They've pulled one of the generators out of Foxtrot. The first step, perhaps, to cutting the electricity off from the compound and to try to force everyone in Foxtrot into the other compounds. But it's going to make it extremely overcrowded. The tensions are already rising because people are fearful of the circumstances inside the detention centre, and they're just as fearful, perhaps more fearful, of the situation outside the detention centre.
You say they've removed exercise equipment.
The two gyms have been closed in my compound and in Oscar compound, so they've removed all the exercise equipment from those areas. It may be that they're trying to provide extra space for people who they hope to force out of Foxtrot. But the immediate impact is that there's one more activity which is just not available to the people inside the detention centre. So it is part of turning the screw, removing the items from the canteen, clearing out the gym. I think they're trying to send a message to people in the detention centre that they are going to be forced to move. They did put a notice up to say that the closure of Foxtrot was imminent, but there's no date associated with that. And the truth is that there is nowhere for people to go. Situation in the other compounds, the Mike and Oscar and Delta, is already crowded, and they are going to have to try and force refugees out of Oscar and Delta compounds to go to Floringau outside the detention centre if there is going to be any room. There's no future for people in East Floringau. The situation is just as difficult. People are very fearful of the attacks that refugees have been subjected to. Those have been pushed out of the detention centre. Last week we had a guy, he may still lose his arm, but he suffered savage machete cuts right through to the bone and other machete cuts in his other arm. And that's just the most recent attack. They're very common now. The more people are forced into East Floringau, the more likely we are to see those kind of attacks.
A welfare group in Fiji says young women frequently caught in vicious cycles resulting from poverty, sexual exploitation and broken families. Homes for Hope team leader Alita Waka Baka helps women and girls who are victims of sexual abuse and violence. She spoke with Sela Jen Alaholi about the social service issues teenager girls face in Fiji.
Looking back at our records, every year we would receive about 15 to about 18 moms. The number of the teenage moms that we receive are very low, mainly because they have to go through the process of the family court. And depending on the nature of the case, that can be something that protects them from coming, you know, straight to Homes of Hope.
What's the issue that your community-based outreach, Homes of Hope, are dealing with at the moment?
So we work with community girls. So we see a lot of school dropouts. There's a lot of school dropouts, mainly because of financial difficulties or because of family problems. And so the teenage girls have lived with other family members, or they've moved from one home to another. And somehow they end up in very vulnerable situations, which normally exposes them to being vulnerable, to being exploited sexually. So that's something that we're seeing. A lot of these young girls are in homes or settlements where, you know, there's abuse of glue. Those are some of the things that we're noticing right now. So we have girls who have been referred by other girls, you know, by girls who have come into this, you know, to our care because of other girls who know that, okay, I've got another friend who's also not at school and who's just at home, and somehow referring each other into the program, which is really positive.
It's that vicious cycle that the young girls are getting caught in, from poverty leading to other issues. What patterns do you see with these young girls coming through your doors?
Yeah, definitely it's a big factor, finance and poverty, so to speak. And we've noticed a few cases that have come out of communities that have gone through, you know, the recent disasters that we've had. So they've moved into, you know, Viti Levu from the outer islands, and somehow, you know, they've come, they've stayed with other relatives, and, you know, so really they're trying to make ends meet, and maybe feeding the families is priority. The sending to school is really not a priority for some of these families. And that's the reason why, you know, some of these young girls are finding themselves pregnant. And also in some of the communities we're working in, that's becoming a norm. It's accepted. When someone's, you know, as young as 15 or 16 and they're pregnant, it's not something, you know, like, okay, somehow it's just sort of embraced and not looked at as how can we help this girl to maybe after they've given birth to move on again with education.
And you're listening to Focus Asia Pacific, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. The Regional Security Force that has been keeping peace in the Solomon Islands for the better part of 14 years is leaving the country this Friday. The Regional Assistance Mission, or RAMSI as it's known, intervened in Solomon Islands after bloody ethnic fighting killed hundreds, displaced thousands of people, and brought the nation's economy to its knees. Karori Hawkins reports.
Hundreds of Solomon Islanders gathered at the Maranatha Hall east of Honiara for the service to give thanks for RAMSI.
We pray that every Solomon Islanders take full responsibility in ensuring that we all live together in long-lasting peace and prosperity from here on.
This wasn't your usual church service, though. There were speeches, the first from the Special Coordinator for RAMSI, Quinton Devlin. He acknowledged the work of thousands of men and women from New Zealand, Australia and 13 Pacific Island countries who contributed to the mission.
To help a friend in need, to end the violence, to stabilise the country and its economy, to help national and provincial governments better represent and serve their citizens, and to create the conditions where Solomon Islanders could resume control of their lives and futures.
The Solomon Islands Prime Minister Manasseh Songovare also spoke, giving thanks for all the partnership had achieved.
We give thanks because our children can once again play freely. We can once again function as a normal sovereign country. We give thanks that the divisions that created animosity have withered. We give thanks because we are proud to be Solomon Islanders.
On the streets of Honiara, some Solomon Islanders voiced their worries about RAMSI leaving.
I feel I'm not safe. I'm not confident when Ramsi is one up.
It makes me feel really sad because Ramsi has been doing a lot of work here in the Solomons and has established a lot of things, peace and order, and people are starting to gain confidence when Ramsi was here.
We're not really sure what will come after they are leaving the Solomon Island, as we are the women of Solomon Island, because you are already in the past during this ethnic tension. It's really, you know, it hurt us and, you know, put us in some kind of position that we lost, we're nothing. Yeah?
But this woman is proud the Solomon Islands no longer needs Ramsi.
If you regret this country, you name it as a Christian country. You stand by yourselves and like your independence and make the Solomon Island to be a better living. Then you always rely to other country to depend on. We get our government, we independence, we school, we educate ourselves. They make our country to a better living if you think proud of Solomon Island.
The government has been at pains to point out that there will still be Australian and New Zealand police officers in the Solomon Islands as long-term advisers, and much of the work to improve the government will continue under longer-term bilateral programs. As one of the locally based diplomats put it in the local paper, Ramsi is leaving, but we are not. At the Ramsi Thanksgiving service, the Archbishop of the Church of Melanesia, Reverend George Takeli, laid down a challenge to all Solomon Islanders.
What are we looking for? And where do we go from here as we celebrate this service? Do you have a goal? Do we have an aim? A saying goes, if we aim at nothing, we will hit nothing.
Leaders from all 15 Pacific countries that contributed to the mission will be travelling to Honiara this week for the final Ramsi farewell event on Thursday, which has been declared a public holiday. The Deputy Prime Minister, Paula Bennett, will be leading New Zealand's delegation. From Honiara, this is Kuroi Hawkins.
Oceana Hockey says the Pacific region is not being left behind in the global revamp of the sport. This month, the International Hockey Federation announced a new international competition called the Hockey Pro League. The league will start in 2019 with elite nations including Australia and New Zealand involved. But Oceana Hockey's Continent Development Officer, Gil Gemmy, told Vinnie Wiley, Pacific teams are not being left out of the loop.
Both Australia and New Zealand are always looking to include the Pacific Islands when they have an event like the Pro League is likely to be, and to have a lot of activities around it. You know, they are already looking at, you know, how that can include the Pacific Islands in an event, perhaps beside it. But I guess the World League round one and two will still be there. And so there's been no change as far as that level of competition for the Pacific Islands.
Aside from this Hockey Pro League, there are still Olympic Games, there are still Commonwealth Games, there are still, you know, World Cups as well. So obviously there will still be qualifying pathways for those events.
Absolutely. And I think the big change that we have made is recognising for, you know, the Pacific Islands that there needed to be another level of competition within our continent. This year we have Oceania Cup, which is always a qualifier, and it is our highest level tournament and is the one that all our member countries can get an opportunity to gain world ranking points. And all of our Pacific Island nations now have a world ranking sort of standing. But this year, at Oceania Cup, we're introducing a new tournament called the Intercontinental Fives. And Hockey Fives has been the new game that was introduced by FIH and played for the first time at the Youth Olympic Games. The important thing is for the island nations, one, they struggle to get playing fields and equipment. And so when they first start off, Hockey Fives is an ideal game for them because it has a smaller footprint on the land, so it's easier to find a place to play. But also the rules are more simple, and it's a very fast and open game, and it's easy for them to pick up. This year, in response to that, the fact that we have new members in the Solomons and Tonga now regularly playing, we've also put alongside the main event in Oceania Cup, the Intercontinental Fives, and that really now has given them, all of the Pacific countries, an opportunity to make a choice. Do they wish to enter the 11s or do they wish to play for fives? But the critical thing is FIH have now agreed to allow the world ranking points to go through to the Hockey Five. So for this year, we have Australia, New Zealand and Papua New Guinea playing in the 11s. So that'll be allocated 1, 2, 3 of our world ranking points. But the other nations playing in the fives, whoever finishes top will get the 4th highest ranking points and continuing down.
And finally on the program, an Australian comedy series, which has been labelled an insult to Tongan culture, is to be shown on New Zealand's Māori television. Tongans living in the US have been particularly hurt by the show Jonah from Tonga, but the broadcaster says Tongan New Zealands can handle the satire. Sarah Jane Aholele reports.
A Tongan American military veteran started a petition to pull the show Jonah from Tonga off America's HBO cable network in 2014. The Tongan teenager, played by Australian comedian Chris Lilly, was seen as violent and disrespectful to Tongan culture. The petition went viral and was signed by almost 12,000 supporters. It also provoked a response from the Samoan writer Morgan Godfrey, who wrote an opinion piece for The Guardian newspaper.
I thought it was really problematic for a white Australian to critique racism as he claimed in the way that he did, because I didn't think it was clever or smart to dress as a Tongan teenager, literally with brown makeup on, faking an accent, faking a Tongan accent, and using that as a critique of racism, because it's actually a form of brown face.
Mr. Godfrey says the character of Jonah reinforces racism, and he is disappointed that Māori television is to broadcast the show.
I think it's a good way to look at it. What are the boundaries for, you know, white fellas like Chris Lilly when it comes to racism? When I was at school and Summer Heights High came on, and, you know, mates would watch it, they didn't see this elegant critique of racism. What they saw was this white fella playing a dumb coconut, and they laughed along at the dumb coconut. They didn't laugh along at the white racist that he was critiquing. So I think that's the problem there.
A statement from New Zealand's Human Rights Commission says it's best that the television network consults the Tongan community here.
While beloved by some, others find this character offensive. We think it would be a good idea for Māori television to talk with the Pacifica communities, particularly Tongan Kiwis, to see what they think, as their views matter most in this scenario.
Māori TV asked Will Ilolahia to gauge the views of New Zealand's Tongan community.
I actually was asked by Māori television what I thought, and I put out a quick survey with some Tongan people, both young and old, and there was an agreement that, you know, yeah, it was concerning, but the overall feedback I got was that, you know, it's great to laugh at ourselves now and then, and, you know, to be honest, I actually got shocked.
Mr. Ilolahia has deep connections with the Tongan community and has a background in sociology and statistics.
Tongan youth were the ones that I actually initially approached, church leaders. The gender balance was probably about 60-40 to male. Obviously, all New Zealand-based, there was no consultancy with those overseas, and probably skewed to Auckland, but the majority of us Tongans live in Auckland anyway, being the second largest PEI community in Auckland, but third in Aotearoa.
Māori TV's head of content, Mike Rehu, says the broadcast has been sensitive in airing the series.
We do have some acquisition staff here at Māori TV who are part Polynesian and part Māori, and they were the people that thought this might be a good product and piece of content for our channel. So we did, through that process, take up some consultation with the Tongan community, and we got the green light from who we feel is a pretty good, wide feedback from the Tongan community.
Mr. Rehu says, ultimately, you can't please everyone.
We've got to understand that one or two people may be upset by it, but that's the issue that we have with comedy, and in particular satire in New Zealand. You'll note that a lot of the mainstream channels don't do comedy in New Zealand. We decided 2 years ago to do it because we know it's successful with engaging people, especially young Māori males, but also the Māori community like to laugh at themselves. That's the thing with satire. It does challenge people sometimes.
Mr. Rehu says that the series starts on Māori television this week. This is Sarah Jane Aholele.
All right, and with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Focus Asia Pacific. Just to let you know that we actually have a couple of special programs coming up in the month of July, as we do every year at this time. Now, this is only for the weekly International Edition, the one that you're listening to right now. The 15-minute, three times daily program that goes to the Pacific will be as normal. But those who listen to the International Edition will hear a couple of best of programs coming up very soon. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is focus@pcjmedia.com. Once again, focus@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.